Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Midwest Hemp Council audio podcast. I'm your host, Jason Dozier. So happy to have you with us. And today on the program, we're going to hear from Morgan Tweet. Morgan is the co-founder and COO of IND Hemp. Morgan, how you doing? And thanks for being on the program.
I'm good. Jason, how are you?
Doing fantastic. Again, appreciate you being on the program, taking time to join us. I know you're out in Montana. How's the weather out in Montana right now?
It's pretty dry and pretty hot right now, but that's pretty typical for July. We're definitely still in a drought out here, but we've been thankful to have a few rainstorms every now and then. So
Does it, every drop. Does it get real hot out in Montana in the summer and cold in the winter, or like extremes either way?
Yeah, it really depends on where you are. Montana is a pretty big state and pretty diverse. So we're located in north central Montana. And so our area is pretty windy, can be pretty arid. It's kind of the high plains and arid desert. So definitely a lot of extremes. You know, we can see some, you know, hundreds in the day, but you know, we really don't see that till July, August time. And then definitely cool in the winter, you know, February, March, where it would not be shocking at all to get, you know, several weeks in a row with negative temperatures. You know, wind chill, negative 35 degrees, it can get pretty chilly.
Yeah, being from Indiana, see, that's what I would assume. When I look at the map and I see Montana up in the north, I just assume it's basically the Arctic tundra all the time. But but obviously those extremes, that would, and different parts of the state having different climates, certainly could make it interesting agricultural-wise as far as what can grow in any given part of the state. How does hemp do just in general in Montana? Are there good places, bad places? How does that work up there?
Yeah, we're still figuring that out, but you know, we're located in, you know, right next to the Golden Triangle, which is one of the most productive regions for wheat and barley in the nation. You know, we have several malting facilities, so Coors and Anheuser have infrastructure here, a lot of grain elevators around, and so this is the heart of grain country. And so hemp seed grain is a good fit. And when you look at who globally has really been the leader in production, it's just our neighbors to the north in Canada, and they're known for their productive acres for hemp seed. And so we have been very fortunate that we have access to those genetics and varieties. We've been growing since 2019. My dad actually has the first license in Montana that he got back in 2014. And so he's been growing, you know, little plots for a while. And then really we went into scalable commercial production back in 2019. So we also are doing fiber trials and production. This year, or last year, was our first year at scale. We had about over 1,000 acres in contract for fiber. And we're still figuring that out because it does like water. And unfortunately, the last couple of years, we've just really had a severe drought here. So we've targeted irrigated acres. We do have that here in Montana and have seen to be really successful. One thing that Montana has going for it, both for the grain and fiber production, is, you know, we have longer days here. And so it is a photosensitive plant. And so when you have longer daylight hours, you do see, you know, increases in their yield production. We also have, you know, a pretty arid climate. And so especially for the grain production, you know, this is an oilseed crop. There is a potential to get, you know, for molding and other bacteria to start to grow if you're in, you know, a high moisture environment. And so because we don't really have humidity here, that it's helpful for our grain guys when they're harvesting and cleaning and, you know, storing it to have that relatively low humidity.
So when it's over 100 degrees there, it's a dry heat is what you're saying.
Yes, absolutely.
Huh, interesting. And being in Montana, is the growing season for hemp any different than it would be in the Midwest, Indiana, Ohio, Illinois, that area?
Not really. You know, I think we had a couple of plots that we were growing in Iowa a year or two ago. We have good friends in Indiana. And as far as like, you know, planting time frame, you know, it's, you want to plant earlier if you can. You know, sometimes organic production, you might wait for the first flush of weeds and such, but soil temperatures kind of are dictating that. Some guys are delaying planting if they want a shorter crop, but we've had success, you know, for the most part, with guys planting as early as mid-April, all the way as late as early June. The fiber crop, you know, we always try to get in earlier just because, you know, we need as many days in the ground to get as much biomass accumulation as we can. Since harvest is also kind of dictated about what your crop is, grain typically is going to be happening in September. What we have here in Montana, we may get an early frost that might bring that up earlier, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. You know, hemp is an indeterminate plant, and so it'll continue to put on seed. And sometimes that's challenging for the farmer. They don't know, you know, quite when they want to get out there. It just keeps putting on seed. And so they, you know, they want to maximize their yield. And sometimes a killing frost helps make that decision for them. And then the fiber, some contracts were going to be harvesting as early as 1st of August. And then, you know, as late as probably mid-September, we do really have to go through a rutting process. I'm not sure if your listeners are familiar with that, but that is critical and will dictate when you can harvest the fiber, especially under irrigated acres. You know, you want to get it laid down and then, you know, potentially run that pivot over one more time if you don't have just natural moisture to count on. And then you need those heat units to really start to get those microbes to start breaking down that material. So.
Oh, fascinating. And again, speaking with Morgan Tweet, Morgan is the co-founder and COO of IND Hemp, also the executive director of Hemp Feed Coalition. We're going to talk about both of those entities here in a moment, Morgan, but want to dig a little bit further into your background, and you brought up your father. I believe you said your father had the first hemp license there in Montana in 2014, and you did say father, not grandfather, right?
Yes. Okay. Father.
Just making sure I'm clear there. And so obviously you guys had some foresight. What were you involved in that decision with your father, or was or when did you get involved? And what made him decide to make that leap so soon before everybody else?
Yeah, so my dad has a technical background. He's done a lot of work on brownfield development sites. And so he came to the hemp industry looking at hemp as a phytoremediation source. He has access to an old oil refinery up in northeast Montana and was starting just kind of the preliminary trials of, hey, how do we clean up, you know, millions of gallons of crude oil that's been left over from, you know, just an abandoned refinery. And so that's what led him to hemp and doing some research. And then when the 2014 Farm Bill, you know, came available and a program was set up in Montana, he thought it would be a really great idea to get some plot trials, both on the refinery site, but also just in the region to see, you know, how it could grow. And went up to a couple universities up in Canada to see what they were doing. So I think by the grace of God, he found it. And somehow he was the smartest guy in the state on hemp. And so he was, you know, brought into several meetings with Department of Agriculture and stuff, and, you know, just as a passionate leader and in general. And so it wasn't long before, you know, he's kind of chirping in my ear about, hey, this hemp thing's a really great idea. And at that time, you know, I have a background in chemical engineering and worked for a big ag company in the Midwest. I lived in Illinois and worked for ADM. And at that time I was like, yeah, whatever, you're the crazy hemp guy. And really didn't give it much thought after that until it was 2018, and I had taken leave of absence, kind of a sabbatical from work and doing some traveling. And turns out you need a job to make money. So I was at a vulnerable point in my career. And my dad was like, hey, I really think there's an opportunity here for us to put in a processing facility. Because at that time, you know, a lot of people were talking about hemp, a lot of people wanted to consume it and grow it, but there really wasn't anyone that had infrastructure to support the farmers to convert their raw material into a usable product. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my background in engineering and the work that I did with ADM, you know, I was like, well, I probably could build you a facility, but I don't know anything about hemp. And we just kind of trickled, you know, or snowballed from there. So that was, you know, October of 2018. The Farm Bill passed into legislation at the end of 2018, made it federally legal. And so it was, you know, very quickly that, you know, things just started to speed up from there. So it's pretty crazy to think, you know, this has all really only happened in the last 3+ years. But we've been trying to move fast and try to help as many people as we can along the way.
Do you happen to know off the top of your head how many licenses were issued this year for Montana hemp farmers?
No, that's a good question. I do probably not very many. You know, 2020 was probably our peak year, and I think we had like 270 some licenses there.
Okay.
And then We had a dramatic reduction. You know, I think everyone maybe is familiar with the kind of the CBD boom, especially for production. Mm-hmm. And so we had a lot of licenses in 2019 and 2020, and then we saw a dramatic reduction in 2021. I think it went down to, you know, less than 50 licenses. And then this year, you know, probably flirting around that same number. But you know, it's a good question. I need to look into that.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Okay, so let's talk about the IND Hemp. You are the co-founder and COO of IND Hemp. Go ahead and just tell us what IND Hemp is all about, what you guys do, and how people can get involved with it.
Yeah, so it's for industrial, right? Because that's what we always have been, an industrial-focused company, specifically around the industrial hemp, you know, market, so grain and fiber. And so, you know, we started with the oil seeds model, and so we contracted acres for specifically for the seed, and built the infrastructure to a food grade facility that we could, you know, bring in that seed, clean it, and then produce either an oil and a protein or the hemp hearts in the hulls at that facility. And then, you know, it wasn't long, even before, you know, we had the facility up and running, when my dad was just doing, you know, little acre plots here and there, that guys were saying, hey, what do you want me to do with this fiber that's left over in the field? You know, it's really a nuisance. And so we knew early on that we were going to have to build something or create some sort of pathway for these guys to do something with that fiber. And so in 2021, we really doubled down and invested heavily in building a new facility and purchasing the equipment and installing it for a decortication facility.
And I'm sorry, when did you start IND Hemp?
So officially we started, you know, like I said, I like to say that time, 2018. I think my dad would argue that it was before then, when he had, you know, ideas of it, you know, probably before 2018. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But our oil seeds facility came online. We commissioned it the first of 2020. And then, you know, obviously COVID hit and everyone was thrown for a loop there. And so it was during that time that we decided and had the opportunity to invest in fiber. And so we broke ground on our new facility at the end of 2020 and then commissioned it at the end of 2021. So we've really only been running for about 6 months.
Oh, okay. And what have you seen in that 6 months as far as growth? Are you just getting your feet on the ground?
So in the last 6 months, it's been really exciting. You know, we've had a huge outpouring of interest, both from the customer side, you know, the producer side and the regulator side. You know, this is, truly the first scalable commercial decortication facility, mm-hmm. In the U.S. And so we've had a lot of people that have come out for tours, that want to see our products, a lot of people asking for samples. You know, the fiber part of the industry is really kind of the last thing to get going. I understand why. It's challenging. It's very capitally intensive. It's an economies of scale business. You have to be able to do it, you know, to make money at it, because the products we make are, you know, durable materials. You know, you don't have high margins that you would have with like a food material or like, you know, a software or some sort of widget, right? So It is very much a commodity material that has low margins to it just inherently. And so you need to be doing it at scale to make it profitable. And so, you know, we've invested over $25 million today, both between our oil seeds and our fiber facility. And we're very fortunate to have very patient, you know, family funding that understands, you know, the bigger picture here.
Right.
Because we started this with a mission not to make money. It was a mission to create impact in rural America and to provide a really good rotation crop, so that more and more of these farmers, you know, that are good family friends, don't have to, you know, put the farm on the line, right? How many years have we heard from wheat farmers or corn or soybean farmers that, you know, this year they may not make it, right? It's just such a volatile business. And I think that overall, you know, if we could give an opportunity for farmers to be a little bit more diversified and in incorporating rotation crops that, you know, add value to their bottom dollar line, but also add value to their soils, you know, it's a really great crop if you're considering organic or regenerative farming. And so, you know, that's where we started. And obviously you got to make money to keep the lights on. So we are very conscious of that.
Right.
But we're very fortunate that, like, you know, we believe in the bigger picture here. We think that hemp has, you know, the legs to really not only be a good, sustainable, you know, durable material, but also we can feed the nations with it. It's one of, you know, nature's superfoods. It's one of the most complete proteins that are out there and has an amazing fatty acid profile. So there's so many things that, you know, are great about hemp. Obviously, we drink the Kool-Aid and we love it. But I think, you know, it has a place to play across the U.S. and Indiana included.
Well, thank goodness there's folks like you out there making such major investments, because without those investments, the market would be very slow to move forward. So with folks out, you put, you know, like you out there putting it on the line, as you said, you're not doing it necessarily for the profit, but those investors are certainly, you know, not necessarily going to want to just donate $25 million to the cause. So we certainly, you know, hope the best, and that will have a return for you there. But let's go on and talk about the Hemp Feed Coalition. You're the executive director. Tell us what the Hemp Feed Coalition is all about.
Yeah, so a lot of your listeners may not know, but there's actually more strict regulations revolved around animal feed than there is around human food. And so, you know, hemp ingredients or hemp seed ingredients did get GRAS notices in 2018. Mm-hmm. And so GRAS means generally recognized as safe. So basically, you and I can eat it. We can give it to our kids. We can give it to our grandma. And there's no concern that like any health concern, but for whatever reason, there's a huge concern, obviously, when you take that same food and you try to feed it to a pig, mm-hmm. Which is a little challenging for some of us to wrap our head around. So the Hemp Feed Coalition is a really great nonprofit. It is made up of a diverse network of members, from nutritionists to veterinarians to feed formulators to, you know, people in the industry like myself. That want to see hemp approved as a federally legal feed ingredient. It's a pretty challenging process. You think that you'd be like, okay, you know, throw some research and some things out there and, you know, get it approved. But, you know, statistically, and there was, you know, a senator that just put some language out there about how long it takes. You know, it's usually 3 to 5 years is what they've seen historically for one ingredient to get across the finish line. And it's not just a single ingredient, right? Like, I wish I could say, hey, let's approve hemp. But it's more, hey, let's approve hemp seed meal, which hemp seed meal is a derivative of the hemp seed. And so they go down to like the most minute details. And then you have to put forth an application for a specific species. So you just can't say, hey, I want to get hemp seed meal approved for animals. Mm-hmm. I need hemp seed meal for laying hens. So it's extremely specific. The research is very costly. You know, the applications take a lot of time. And then just like anything with our government, right, it takes, you know, a lot of time to get a response from them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so we're in the middle of that. And it's, you know, I just got off a call this morning with some people that were trying to work on our response to FDA CVM. And so I believe a lot in the Hemp Feed Coalition, because it's absolutely imperative for our industry to be able to break into these markets like animal feed, because, you know, there's low hanging fruit there. And then there's also this thing that, you know, there's ingredients that we produce in these oilseed processors that just don't really make a good food product, whether it's texture or taste or, you know, concerns with, you know, yeast and mold or other things. I mean, this is an agricultural product, right? It's getting harvested off of the field, a chance that, you know, you might have some dirt or something in there that's not good for a human, you know, is very likely. And so what do you do with that product that comes out? How do we protect these farmers who are still learning how to grow it, still learning how to incorporate it? How do we protect them to make sure that there's a market for them? And animal feed is a huge market. I mean, you look at where most of your corn and soy goes to, mm-hmm. a large portion of those byproducts are going to animal feed. And so, you know, if we're going to compete on a commodity market, if we're going to ever be able to break through and grow, you know, thousands of acres at a time, you absolutely have to have animal feed markets to get into.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And there's so many questions that I have for you on each of these topics, but I know we're limited on time. There's one more thing we need to discuss here. The hemp exemption initiative. Can you talk about that? I know you're leading the way with that as well.
Yeah, well, I'm really excited to share about that. So, you know, when the 2014 Farm Bill came along and we got hemp, the pilot program approved, it was a huge win for the industry. on the same lines are, you know, 2018 with federal approval was, again, another really big win for the industry. But unfortunately, at that time, you know, really when you look at the production and what was being grown there, it's a very cannabinoid-focused market and, you know, producer, consumer across the board. And what has happened since then is there's just this conflation between the ingredients where, you know, they're actually very, very different. you know, cannabinoid production, the majority of it is very horticultural, right? It follows, quite frankly, a marijuana production model where it's growing in greenhouses. They're, you know, planted in rows with like 4-foot spacing around them. You know, people are out there hand harvesting them. You know, it's much more horticulture. So I tell people it's like, you know, tomato growing. Whereas grain and fiber production is row crop agriculture, right? You plant it with the same equipment that you plant wheat with, that you plant corn with. You harvest it with the same equipment that you harvest wheat with, that you harvest, you know, alfalfa and hay with. And so they're very different production models. And unfortunately, the language right now in the that USDA is using, they monitor and manage those two different production models exactly the same. Mm-hmm. And so the hemp exemption is trying to get the difference in indication and definition between industrial hemp, so we're talking grain and fiber, and floral hemp, because there's a place for both of us, right? I have nothing against floral hemp production, but they have different rules that they need to follow. And I don't think that those rules should be put on my growers in my production models, because they're very different risk models, right? Mm-hmm. The crops that we're growing have been shown to be, you know, repeat low THC models. And at the end of the day, you know, THC compound is found in the floral material. Well, guess what? My guys, like, they don't harvest that. It doesn't exist in their combine. It is destroyed in the harvesting practices. So if there's no way for one of my farmers to harvest that floral material where the THC compound is found, why do we care, and why are we putting such burdens on them? Mm-hmm. And so I really think that this exemption is going to propel the industry forward. It's going to give us that distinction and kind of demystify this crop. And it gives us a way to say, hey, you know, we're the other side of the industry that is talking food, is talking building materials, is talking about carbon sequestration. You know, it just gives us a little bit of distance, and then also gives us the bandwidth for states' departments of agriculture and USDA to manage it differently, which they have been, like, you know, crying out for a solution, because right now the current plan is almost impossible for them to manage. They have such stringent sampling protocols. You know, there's just not enough people to go out and walk these. I mean, you know, my guys are growing 500 acres at a time. Mm-hmm. How do you expect some sampling, you know, technician to come out and walk every 20 feet and take a sample?
Right.
It just doesn't work. So we need a different program. We need to be able to manage them separately, and we should take the burden off these farmers so we can really grow the industry to a scale that we need to be competitive on a global market.
Well, obviously this is going to be of interest to a lot of folks listening right now. How do they get more information or get involved with the hemp exemption initiative?
Yeah, that's great. So just go to our website. It's just hempexemption.com. There's a place to sign up. We are really excited that we finally got approval from both our Democratic and Republican champions. So we will be releasing our press releases next week. Hopefully you guys will be on the lookout for that. But we will have a Patreon sort of platform for people to, you know, to use our letter to submit it to their representatives and their senators, and hopefully they recognize the need for this. You know, whether you're a farmer or not, you know, this is something that does affect you. If you're a consumer, if you're someone that wants to support the industry, this is something that helps that. You know, I always go back to the people that are like wearing a hemp t-shirt and are like excited that they're eating hemp hearts. Well, guess what? Like, this affects you, because mm-hmm. right now you're most likely using a hemp t-shirt that was using imported hemp fibers, and you're most likely eating hemp hearts that were also imported. And so a lot of the markets that we are trying to compete in have less stringent regulations. And so it's more economical and more competitive for them in those other areas. And it's not fair to the U.S. manufacturer and to the U.S. farmer. And as a U.S. consumer, you should care about that.
And again, that's hempexemption.com. And we have two other items that we talked about today as well, the Hemp Feed Coalition. How can they get information on that?
Yep, same thing. It's hempfeedcoalition.org. Mm-hmm. So we are a nonprofit, so .org. I encourage them. We're running a campaign right now. We do, you know, I'm sure a lot of listeners have always heard this. You know, we do need funds. We need money, because it takes money and takes resources to get these studies going. Mm-hmm. And that's our biggest avenue. And that's where we spend all of our money, is supporting this research. So right now we're currently trying to fund a research study that will be evaluating hemp seed oil for horses. which is a ginormous market. We really want to participate in that. So I do encourage your listeners to go onto our website and learn more.
And you certainly have put your money where your mouth is with the $25 million recent investment in a facility. You guys are certainly doing your part. And then the last one that we wanted to talk about, what we led the program with, the IND Hemp Initiative. How can they get involved in that as well?
Yeah, it's indhemp.com. We try to keep it really simple.
There you go.
Yeah, I definitely encourage your listeners to go on, check out our website. We're pretty proud of it. Again, we're just a family-owned business. It's my dad, his wife, and I, and we've built a family of staff around us that we are really passionate and want to take care of, and we want to take care of our farmers. That's, we consider them part of the IND Hemp family as well, and so encourage you to check it out, you know, learn more about us, and if you have any questions, feel free to reach out.
Absolutely, and again, that was indhemp.com. We also had hempexemption.com and hempfeedcoalition.org. Did I get all three of those right?
You did. Great.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
And as you said, you kept it simple, stupid. That's the way I like it. So there you go. That way people can just hop right on. Again, Morgan Tweet. Morgan, thank you so much for your time today. Was there anything else that we needed to hit on that we did not touch on today?
No, I think you did a great job of summarizing everything. We stay pretty busy, as you might infer. Mm-hmm. So just please reach out to us. You know, we'll try to get you connected. If you're looking for materials, you know, we have hemp foods. We have the hemp fiber, the hemp herd. So we can connect you and get you guys samples. And I just encourage your listeners to, you know, continue to consider hemp part of their diet, part of their, you know, regular nomenclature, and help us to, you know, normalize hemp. You know, we've been, I say, quote unquote, brainwashed for almost 100 years now. And so we're really working to reintegrate this crop back into American agriculture.
Fantastic. Once again, Morgan, thank you so much. And we look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thanks, Jason. Appreciate it.
All right. And that's going to do it for this edition of the Midwest Hemp Council Audio Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Dozier. Thanks so much for joining us. And until next time, so long, everybody.